We're very pleased at this time to continue our study in the 23rd Psalm. This is the most loved chapter in the Old Testament. Of all of the verses, of all of the chapters in the Old Testament, this is the one that's most apt to be memorized, most apt to be quoted, and for good reason. This psalm has a tremendous amount of comfort. It is designed to give us peace and security. It's designed to give us a feeling that everything is all right as long as we're accessible to God, and it does just that. It's short, only 6 verses, but it has a powerful, everlasting message. It depicts God in 2 modes of helping us. First of all, he's described as a shepherd. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. And this psalm shows how that he leads his flock. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the path of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil, my cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. So that's the reading of this little psalm. In our last lesson, we'd gotten into this 4th verse and almost through with the 4th verse. That's the one that states, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. And we discussed the fact that man is continually walking in this shadow of death. Death may come at any time. Death will come many times without a warning. We never know what's going to be our last day upon this earth. So we're continually in this shadow of death. We may be in a poor state of health. We may be in a terminal state, not expected to live very long. And certainly that's in the shadow of death. But we can also be in the very best of health. We can have all kinds of vigor and youth, and still death is a lurking enemy. It is certainly a possibility at any time. But as we walk through this shadow of death, as we're on the very brink of death at all times in our lives, we have no reason to fear any evil, for the Lord is with us. The Lord has given us an answer to death now. We are going to have a resurrection of the dead. We're going to be given another life. We're going to be given another existence after this life. And so death, then, has lost its great, terrible sting because of that. In our last lesson, we discussed this in much more detail, so we'd like to move on now. In the last part of this 4th verse, after he says, I will fear no evil, thou art with me, then he says, thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Now, the shepherd had a rod and a staff. And the best we can understand is the staff would be that thing that he carried to lean upon. That's what he supported himself with. It was an assistance in his walking and moving about. But the rod was the shepherd's crook. And it was the thing that he used to assist the sheep and to chastise the sheep. Some talk about the shepherd taking this crook and hooking the leg of a little animal and pulling it in this or that direction, or maybe goading the animal as it needed to, or maybe giving some chastisement if it needed it, or it was a thing that the sheep would pass under as they were being counted. And so this rod and this staff were very symbolic of authority and of security. It was symbolic of the leader, the protector, the shepherd. And so the very sight of the rod and the staff in the hands of the shepherd was a source of comfort. They comfort me. Oh, I'd like to see that as a sheep, to know that the shepherd's there, to know that he's going to give me his protection. You know, many times we as children, when we grow up and leave home, we think back on the things that we had at home and some of those things that our parents had and used habitually. Just the very thought of them gives us a sense of comfort because we remember the security we had as a child as our parents used these objects. And maybe it's an old clock that was a favored object of our parents. And we remember them winding this clock and remember them looking at it and placing a high value upon it. And so as we then see that clock, we have memories of our parents. Well, this rod and the staff, to the sheep were things that were very symbolic. They recognized them as signs of authority and as signs of security, and so they comfort me. They're figurative to us, but nevertheless, it's the things of God that we're talking about here. Knowing that God is in our presence. Reading this very psalm is a source of comfort. This is an evidence of God. Anything that gives us evidence that God is, that God exists, that God is our God. These things all then give comfort to those that are the sheep, to those that are members of His flock. They rejoice and they take great solace in the fact that there is evidence of God. As I look out the window this morning and see the brilliance of the sun coming up, and we remember what was taught about the sun in the 19th Psalm, this is another evidence that there is a God. He's given me fresh testimony today that He is. And so this is a source of comfort to me. As I see that sun, that's as symbolic to me as the rod and the staff was to the flock. It comforts me. I know that there's a God. And I know that this God is not only real, but He is reliable. He's going to carry out the promises that He's made. I just have to be His follower. I have to be His subject. I have to be a member of His household. And when that is accomplished, and when I maintain my status in His family, then He is a comfort to me. And so anything that we see and know that shows us that there is this God, any part of His Word, any part of His creation, any part of His law, His commandment, even another child of God, the worship that we engage in, all of these things are a comfort to us because they remind us of God. They show us that God is. And sure, these things may be used to chastise us sometimes. They may be used to correct us when we go astray, but they also may be used to protect us, to guard us, to guide us, to feed us. And so they are a thing that we look upon as a source of comfort. So, thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Now, beginning in the fifth verse, he changes the figure. Now, instead of being a shepherd, he turns to being a host. So that the child of God now is having the things prepared for him that a host would prepare for an honored guest. He says in the fifth verse, thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. The word here for table means feast. And so he's saying in a symbolic way, in a figurative way, that you prepared for me the things that I need. To prepare a feast before me in the presence of mine enemies means that the enemies were there. The enemies observed and saw what God did for him. The enemies saw how that he was helped by God. And yet, they couldn't do anything about it. They were powerless to keep God from helping him. They were not able to interfere with God's preparing this table or this feast for him. It also teaches that he had everything that he wanted to prepare a feast. One of the basic needs of man when he's in times of trouble and distress is to have food, to have nourishment, to be able to satisfy his bodily needs. And so God does this. He prepares this. He makes it available for us. And He does it in the presence of our enemies. Our enemies are powerless to do anything to change this, to stop this, to interfere with God providing us with the things that we need. We read of several times in David's life in which he was hungry and had to go and beg and seek after some kind of food so that he didn't starve to death, he and his followers. But nevertheless, God did provide them with the things that they needed. And I'm sure that he had some of those things in mind as he writes this. So that whatever our state of distress is, and we may have never in our lives been in a state where we're really hungry, but that may be a possibility yet in the future. Whatever our state is, God will provide the things we need if we're followers of God. And he makes that promise. He gives that statement. And it's done in such a way that our enemies are able to see that we are prospering in spite of them. Our enemies are able to observe that we still have not been deprived of our basic needs. Regardless of how much persecution they bring upon us, God is there. He does protect us. He does provide for us. Now, the ultimate fulfillment of this is going to be in the judgment day. In Matthew 25, we have a picture of that. Matthew 25, beginning with the 31st verse. When the Son of Man shall come in His glory, and all the holy angels with Him, then shall He sit upon the throne of His glory, and before Him shall be gathered all nations, and He shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divideth his sheep from the goats. And He shall set the sheep on His right hand, but the goats on the left. Then shall the king say unto them on His right hand, Come, ye blessed of My Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was a hunger, and ye gave me meat. I was thirsty, and ye gave me drink. I was a stranger, and ye took me in. Naked, and ye clothed me. I was sick, and ye visited me. I was in prison, and ye came unto me. So we see here that on that final day, on that day of judgment, when all the nations are gathered before Him, He is going to honor those that are righteous, those that are His. He's going to tell them to enter into this kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world, inherit this kingdom, and all nations are going to see this. The enemies are going to see how that you've been rewarded. They're going to see how that He has prepared this great kingdom for you, and consequently then, that's going to be the ultimate fulfillment of this promise to prepare a table in the presence of mine enemies. But we don't have to believe that it's limited just to the judgment day. This happens to us on an ever ongoing basis. Every time we have a need, God provides for us. He provides this table, and He does it in whatever our circumstances may be. The most adverse of circumstances, we still can have the blessings of God. Now, of course, this is dependent upon our being His sheep. This is dependent upon our remaining in His flock. This is dependent upon our having Him to guide us and to lead us in the paths of righteousness for His name's sake. When this happens, then we have this assurance of this great protection and provision that God makes for us. The next statement in verse 5, Thou anointest my head with oil. That is, this word for anoint really means to make fat, and it indicates the idea of abundance. Not only did He give the necessities, prepare the table in the presence of the enemies, but now He gives more than is necessary. He gives this anointing of the head, the anointing of the head with oil. This was a custom in those days, in that area of the world, that when a person came to a feast, to anoint the head with oil. In the case that we read of in Luke 7, verse 46, where this woman anointed Jesus' head with the ointment, he had gone to a feast in which the host had been negligent. The host should have anointed his head with oil, and he didn't. And this woman was simply doing what should have been done on that occasion. It was a proper thing to do. And here we find that the Lord, then, as He takes care of us, He's going to give us the things that make us have joy and comfort. His promises are really not limited to bare necessities of life. Although if He did simply stop with the bare necessities, we could be most appreciative and most thankful for that. But His promises go beyond that. Not only is the table prepared in the presence of the enemies, but Thou anointest my head with oil. And this also is in the presence of the enemies. So God gives us blessings. And the idea is that God is going to give us abundance. He's going to give us plenty. This phrase, make fat, indicates abundance. And so God will supply all our wants. He's going to supply our needs and then even go beyond what we actually need and give us the things that cause us to have the comforts of life. He further says in verse 5, My cup runneth over. Now this continues the idea of supplying the wants and also supplying it in an abundant manner. When the cup runs over, that means we have all that we want, all that we need, and then some. We have more than we need. And so this would indicate that He would give us enough so that we then could share with others. We could take our prosperity, our blessings, and be able to also provide for the needs of others without having to deprive ourselves of anything, because anything that runs over the cup, we're not going to get it anyway. And it's just another beautiful way of saying that God does make provision for all of our needs. So this fifth verse simply says, Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. My cup runneth over. What a beautiful picture. What a wonderful statement showing how that we then are provided for by the Lord. It matters not what our circumstances are. God is able to provide what we need. He's able to provide more than we need, and He will provide more than we need. Not only are our physical needs satisfied, but also our comforts are taken care of. And then we have an abundance we're able to share with others. And all this in the presence of our enemies, so that the enemies cannot deter or in any wise alter what God wants to do for us in the way of blessings. In verse 6, we have the idea of God continuing these great blessings. Not only has He given the blessings, all the things named in the previous part of this psalm, but He expresses confidence that this is going to continue. He says, "Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life." Now, this word surely indicates that it is a certain thing. He feels very confident about this. What's going to follow him? Goodness and mercy. Now, these are the two great qualities that we get from God, goodness and mercy. When we think of goodness, we think of the grace of God, the things that God gives us that we do not earn. When we think of mercy, we think of the forgiveness of God. And certainly we're in just as great a need of being forgiven of our wrongdoings as we are in need of having the other blessings of life. And when we think of this idea of goodness and mercy, or grace and mercy, we think then that grace is what God gives us that we do not deserve, and mercy is what God does not give us that we do deserve. And these things are really not just luxuries, they are necessities. We, in order to live our life on this earth and to fulfill the purpose that we have been put here for, we, in order to be able to relate to our God, in order to have the hope that we have of another life after this one, in order to have a hope of God being favorable with us in the judgment, we need both these qualities, both goodness and mercy, both grace and mercy. And so he feels very confident. He says, "Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life." Not just for a part of my life, not just in my earlier lifetime, or not just in the very end part of my life, but all the days of my life. Whatever my situation may be, whatever my times of distress may be, whether I seem to be in a state of greater or lesser luxury or poverty, I'm going to have this goodness and mercy. They're going to follow me all the days of my life. And this is a very confident, but yet a very encouraging thought to be able to have. Just to know that whatever lies down the road for us, if we are true to God, if we walk in the paths of righteousness for His name's sake, if we allow Him then to be our guide, and if we stay close to Him, He's going to have goodness and mercy to follow us all the days of our life. And that's just about as blessed a state as we can ever expect to be in this life. Whatever we do, however long we live, all the days of our life, goodness and mercy is going to follow us. There's not one day in our life that we're going to be deprived of goodness and mercy. Think of that. What a marvelous blessing that is. What a great promise that is. What a feeling of exhilaration and optimism this should bring forth in us. And it also should bring forth a very great feeling of dedication and loyalty to God. We want to be acceptable to God. We want to serve this God because He's made us this promise. He has made this statement that surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. Just about any gift that anybody could give you in this life, you would not be able to say that it's going to follow me all the days of my life. This is one of those perpetual gifts, a perpetual promise, all the days of my life. And this idea helps to reflect the beauty and the power of this great little psalm. He further says in the 6th verse, "And I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever." Now, this idea of dwelling in the house of the Lord forever was not just a promise, but it seemed to be a great desire of the writer of this psalm. This is something he wanted to do. God is going to provide me with goodness and mercy all the days of my life, and so I then am going to dwell in the house of the Lord forever. I'm going to keep myself in a position of being in God's house. The same idea as a desire is expressed in Psalm 27, verse 4. There it says, "One thing have I desired of the Lord, that will I seek after, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Lord, and to inquire in His temple." So this is something for us to desire and to work for, to strive for. This being able, it's being allowed, it's being given the privilege of dwelling in the house of the Lord. Back during the days that this psalm was written, of course, this would be those that worked in or about the temple or the tabernacle. Today, in the church, we find that we are a part of this temple of God today. Our bodies are the temple of God. The church is also the temple of God. And so we're able to literally dwell in the house of the Lord in a spiritual sense. Of course, ultimately, we're looking forward to dwelling in heaven. Heaven is going to be our ultimate home. That's going to be the place where we can stay forever. This word forever really means the length of days. It would mean all of the days of our life again. But when we think of it in the ultimate sense, we're going to be able to truly dwell in the house of the Lord forever. That's going to be not only a desire that we have, it's a promise that's given to us, it's something we can look forward to, and it's a part of our hope as followers of God. So this is a very powerful idea of being able to have goodness and mercy follow me all the days of my life, and at the same time, to dwell in the house of the Lord forever. We're going to be there with Him. We're going to be allowed to serve Him. We're going to be allowed to be a participant in the great events that take place in the house of the Lord, whatever those are. We think maybe it might be a privilege to visit some great place like the White House or some great government house where they make laws and where they carry out the business of a nation. But here, to be in the house of the Lord, this is our privilege. This is our opportunity. And that's what we strive for. And it's what we're allowed to do. This psalm states very plainly that not only do we anticipate doing this, not only do we desire doing this, but we will be allowed to do it. This is surely a thing that's going to come to pass, as goodness and mercy will come to pass. And it comes from the Lord. So as we bring this beautiful and powerful little psalm to a close, it only deepens our resolve to continue to use this psalm as a source of great comfort for the people of God. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.